I'm super happy. Are you happy? Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. Here you'll find tips and tricks to inspire you on your way to happiness, to live a courageous life of authenticity, and learn how to speak your truth with grace. I'm Michaela Johnson, and welcome to our podcast. The world is changing and things are becoming crazier by the moment, but you can thrive and you can still experience happiness. If you like this podcast, please click subscribe. Your likes and comments really help this podcast stay as a top iTunes podcast. For more inspiration and happiness, make sure you check out the website, beyoufindhappy.com, B-E-Y-O-U, findhappy.com. Good morning, Mark, and welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. I'm super excited to get to reciprocate and get to jab with you a little bit about life and all things related to being yourself and reducing conflict, because I was a guest on your show and we just had the greatest time visiting. And so I'm super excited to get started today and dive into more of your brain and less of mine.
Well, you know, if I remember you being on my podcast, I wrote a book called Just Listen, and I sometimes have trouble shutting up.
You know, that's an interesting thing. Someone once told me that the best way to get a person to talk is to not talk yourself. And I have found that in my therapy work, one of the most effective tools that I can employ is holding back what I want to say or holding back a thought that I'm having and not filling the silent space. It is so hard to do that though. It is so hard to not fill silent space. And I don't know if it's because we're programmed to solve problems or if it's because we, just have a desire to help people when we see that there's room for improvement or what it is. But I've found the most profound work I do is when I'm doing nothing at all.
I think that is so true. In addition to that, boy, that motorcycle sounded like it was coming through the wall. but in addition to that, something that I've learned is, and I use it with some of my guests on the podcast, is if I can clarify my understanding of what they just said. And if you can use this in therapy, if you were to say that what you just said is much too important for me to have not understand it correctly. This is what I heard you say. Is that true? And I think what's interesting is when you feedback something to another person and you tell them it's really important, and so important that you don't want to misunderstand them, what happens is telling them that what they said is important and then repeating it back to them causes them to have to listen to you repeating back what they said. And that whole process of causing them to now listen to you, but you're not giving them advice. You're just saying what you said was just so important, I want to make sure that I got it. And I think in addition to restraining ourselves and being quiet, I've discovered that when you say that to people, it's really received well.
Yeah, it's interesting when we pose a question how people have to take pause and think about an answer. And we are very hardwired to answer questions, which is a really interesting way to, you know, engage in conversation. I think a lot of times I find myself, especially in this day and age, being talked at rather than being an active participant in a conversation. So one of the things that your history includes is being a former FBI police hostage negotiation trainer. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that is like and how you do that and what your life experience was in that role?
Sure. I think what it taught me, and And it goes along with a talk that I gave in Moscow a few years ago. My books have done pretty well in Russia. And let's not get into the war and politics, but the Russian people, the people of every country are great, and they all want the same things. And I was one of the headliners along with a Nobel Prize winner, Daniel Kahneman. He wrote a book, Thinking Fast and Slow. But one of the things I realized, and I've been trying to teach the world since I spoke in Moscow, and I think it goes along with my work as a therapist, with suicidal patients, my FBI and police hostage negotiation training. What I have been realizing is that underneath people talking to you or at you, or underneath people listening to you, everybody's listening for something. And if you can switch your brain into just being curious what they're listening for that they haven't said, and not have any agenda, people lean into that. So, for instance, what I taught the FBI and police is that, again, I was a specific trainer. I said, when you're dealing with a terrorist who has a specific agenda, that's different than when you're dealing with someone who's really emotional and who, just got themselves in a bad situation. But what I would say is what they're listening for is for you, to understand and not judge them. So I'll give you an example, Michaela, because it happens in all conversations. So let me run this by you and tell me if you feel a change in your brain and mind and physiology. So on the surface in our conversation, you're asking questions and you're listening to me. You're asking questions that you think that it would be of interest to your listeners, and you're listening to my answers. But let me check this out with you. I think underneath it, this is what you're listening for. I think you feel that your listeners trust you and have confidence in you, that you'll give them value and you won't waste their time. And what you're listening for from guests are people that give value to your listeners. And the value is insight, tips that they can use immediately to make their lives better. You may also be listening for people who are best-selling authors, but who are awful. And you have to go back to them and say, I don't know how to say this, but we can't post the interview. So,
I've been there.
but can you feel that that's what you're listening for? That you are a vehicle for improving the lives of your listeners, and you're listening for, are my listeners going to find this helpful, valuable, and a good use of their time, or are they going to find it to be a waste of their time?
Right.
And so, what I'm trying to teach the world is it's always happening. So, if you're there with a patient, if you're there with a spouse, if you're there with anyone, if you're a teenager, if you're a startup pitching investors, and you feel the conversation is going downhill or sideways, rather than escalating or getting defensive or getting scared, if you were to say to the other person, even a teenager, or your spouse, can we stop for a moment? And you don't say it angrily. They're going to go, what? Yeah, can we start for a moment? Stop for a moment? And they'll go, what? Okay. And you say, when we started the conversation, you were listening for something and you didn't hear it. In fact, I think the reason the conversation's going poorly is whatever you were listening for, not only didn't you hear, we've gotten further and further away from what you were looking for, listening for. Can you tell me what you're hoping to get out of this conversation? Because maybe we can still save it.
Oh wow. Well, let
Does
me
that make
ask you
sense? Did that
this.
make
Yeah,
sense?
no, it does. And as you're talking, I'm thinking that's a great way. I mean, this is a good strategy for the reverse component too. Like if the podcast was over today, what is one thing that you would feel was important for you to share with the world in this moment? Like, what's one thing that you think is the most important thing that you can offer the world today? Like, what would you want to tell people?
I would tell people, as you think about conversations you've had in your life, did they go better when you talked or when you listened more? And what I'm hoping you'll say is, it felt good to talk and I felt relief, but as I look back on a lot of conversations, I think they went better when I listened more. In fact, there's an exercise I'm going to give you that I give everyone. And if you apply this exercise, this is a way to build presence muscle. If you follow this exercise and you do it one conversation per day in which you want to be 100% present from the other person's point of view, as opposed to you just being, the expert, the know-it-all, the whatever. And it's difficult to do this, but think of a conversation you're going to have today. And in your mind, you say, this is an important conversation, and I want it to go really well. And not only just well, I'd like the other person to want more conversations like that. I'd want them to say, when can we meet again? And the exercise is called the HUVA exercise, HUVA. So you have that intention of it going well from their point of view, as opposed to just your point of view. And you have the conversation and you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 for HUVA. And so you ask yourself, the H, on a scale of 1 to 10, from their point of view, how much did they feel heard out by me? As opposed to me interrupting them, changing the subject, being distracted. On a scale of
And
one,
the H is heard
heard
or
out, heard out.
okay, I'm writing it down. So the H is heard of. Okay, what's the U?
No, heard out, meaning they felt
Heard
that
out.
I completely heard them until they were finished saying what they wanted to say. The U is understood. How much on a scale of 1 to 10 did they feel understood? And one of the ways you demonstrate that is when they say something. And you pick up a word that they're saying that's a little bit emotional or high pitch, like, well, this is really awful, or this was amazing. After they say that, one of the ways you show understanding is you can say, can you say more about the awful? Can you say more about the amazing? And so what you're doing is rather than having them finish that and then you butt in with what you wanted to say, they feel, wow, you're really interested in what's going on with those emotions. And
My
then,
favorite line in couples counseling is, "Can you tell me more about that?" And
absolutely.
it's amazing what comes out when that's your reply. When somebody says, "Yeah, it felt good that we blah blah blah. Can you tell me more about that?" And now you've got their brain working and they have to elaborate more, which is it's phenomenal.
Oh, it is amazing. And I'll tell you, it's very nuanced because I used to say, tell me more about that. And then what I've switched it to is I've taken the me out of it because tell me more. So I now say more about the awful.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, it pulls me out and makes it not about me and makes it about them. Oh, I like that. I like that.
And that leads into the V. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do they feel valued in what they said? So, like you could demonstrate valuing what I'm saying. Well, you just did it. You could say, "Oh, I like that. Oh, I like taking the me out of it. Oh, that's really valuable." So I feel like what I just told you felt I felt valued. And the final is A. How much did they feel you added value? So how much from their point of view on a scale of 1 to 10 did they feel heard out, understood, valued, and that you added value. And adding value might be, you know, Mark, this what you're talking about is not just something, you know, you can use in these situations. Have you ever thought of using them in these other situations? No, Michaela, I haven't. Wow. So it's a humbling exercise, but if you can do this in one of your conversations each day, at the end of the week, and you look back at your conversations, see which ones you think went the best. And I think the ones in which you practiced HUVA are the ones that will go the best.
And is A acknowledged?
A could be acknowledged, but A is adding value to the value.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so that you not only heard me out, as a podcast host, you not only understood what I'm saying because you were asking clarification, you not only valued me by saying, oh, I like taking the me out of it, but you added value by just your response, and you added value because I have a feeling that you're saying to me, you know, Mark, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try the say more about such and such and take the me out of it because it just feels much better.
So this is an interesting thing that came up in when I was visiting with you, and I've talked with some people in my life about it since the experience. And so here's the thing is Be You, Find Happy, the podcast, it was, you know, incredibly focused on self-help and really kind of a lot in the new age world. And I just kind of got over the rainbows and butterflies and all the baloney and needed to take a break. And now the Be You, Find Happy podcast is coming back in full force. You know, it's a top iTunes podcast and all of this and that. But I really had to take a look at how I wanted to show up. I really wanted to take a look at what it meant to me to be back, and in the changes that I've had in life and the soul searching that I've done and the things that I've personally had in the way of self-growth. And I'm finding that my approach to this podcast is actually an unself-helping. And one of the things that you and I talked about was this, this idea of if we were to take a look at our personality in a circle and we were to say, remove the things that I'm doing to prove myself to someone else, to show myself to someone else, to hide or to please others, what's left? And as I've had conversations with people about that, the majority of people that I talk to say nothing. Every once in a while, I have heard the answer, well, you know, I guess I jog, I exercise for myself. Do you though? Do you really? Well, no, I do it so I stay fit. So that's kind of for myself, but also because my partner likes me to look good. I mean, it was mind blowing how there's really nothing left. I mean, can you share more about that exercise and what your findings have been?
Well, my findings have been that that like everybody, I realize, geez, everything I'm doing is a reaction or desire to get a certain reaction from other people, and it wasn't necessarily an expression of me. And so one of the things that I realized is and the majority of people say nothing's left. Now some people aren't bothered by it, but the purpose of it is for people to be bothered by it, like, wow, everything I do is to prove, show, hide, or please. And if you can just eliminate them, occasionally a calling has been calling out to you about what really matters to you, about what it really takes for you to be at peace, be happy, be joyful, be loving. And what's really missing is something that, as I said, has been calling out to you, but you couldn't hear it because you were too busy proving, showing, hiding, or pleasing. So what's been calling out to me, and again, I'm a good deal older than you, a good deal older than your listeners, is the power of listening. What What called out to me is, you know, Mark, if the world could listen more than it talks, it'd be a different and it would be a better world.
And so this all connects to the book, Just Listen.
Right. Yeah. You know, when I wrote it, it wasn't my first book, but here's a funny anecdote. And I'm not sure if I shared it when you were on mine, but I'll share it now that I'm on yours. Years ago, before I wrote Just Listen, I was walking to my office and there were these two bare-chested surfer dudes mowing their lawns next to each other, and they were drunk. And as I'm walking, one of them looks at me and he says, "Hark ye, pray tell us the secret to peace on earth for ye to pass." And what they didn't know is I'm pretty quick on my feet. And so I'm walking and it's 30 feet later and I'm in front of the other surfer dude. And I look back at both of them because they were both bantering again. I said, "Hark ye back." And they looked at me like, "What?" I said, "Yes, you gave me the challenge. Pray tell us the secret to peace on earth for ye to pass. And I have the answer." And they looked at each other because, you know, they were drunk and they said, "Okay." And then I looked at both of them. And I said, "Listen more than you talk." And they looked at each other, even though they were drunk. And they looked at each other like, "That's pretty good." And one of them shrugged their shoulders and said, "Ye may pass."
Permission granted, fine sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll tell you something that's a good exercise that I use with entrepreneurs. And it's really, because entrepreneurs often have lousy marriages because the entrepreneur is wedded to his or her business and it's all about that. And, you know, and initially when the entrepreneur was pursuing their future spouse, they were really focused on them. But then, you know, after they decide to get married, that entrepreneur focuses on his or her business. In fact, I'll share something that was on Joe Rogan. I don't really watch it, but he interviewed Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and what
but
they
I'm
both
a Rogan
talked
fan, so.
Yeah, no. Hey, he went to my high school.
No kidding. No, wow.
A lot later than I did. But what they both talked about is how their wives, their spouses, interrupt them, and it drives them crazy. If you look at the explanation of what they covered, and like, for instance, Zuckerberg will say that, you know, when my wife, Priscilla Chan, you know, she wants my attention, you know, I may be in the middle of solving some problem that I've been working on. And Joe said, "I have the same thing when I'm coming up with a joke. You know, I'm close to coming up with a joke." And then my wife, you know, when she just asks a question. And so here's something that you should do if you're ambitious and you want to be successful, but you don't want your relationship to suffer. And so this is, you have to be very intentional about this. And what you say to your partner, your spouse is, "Have I ever made you feel that you weren't worth my undivided attention and interest?" That partner is going to tear up or get angry. And they'll say, "Yeah." Second question, "At my worst, how awful can that be for you?" Pretty awful. Then the next thing you say is, "Take me to the last time I did that." And they'll bring up something and you don't take issue with it. And you look at them and you could say, "You know, I did that and that was wrong. And you deserve better, and I'm going to fix this, and I'm sorry." It can be a relationship changer. but you have to mean it. You don't want to tempt someone with how you're going to start listening to them. But what you can say to them is, here's another tip that I learned from a friend of mine. What you can say to them is, when you want to have a conversation with me, going forward, can you tell me whether you want me to just be aware or you want my advice? Because I tend to think of things as I turn conversations into problems and then I come up with solutions. And if you just want me to be aware because it's something that you want to get off your chest and you're frustrated and sharing it, and my just being aware makes you feel better, I don't have to go through the difficulty of trying to figure out what the problem is and then give you advice that you don't want and you can't stand. So going forward, something I'd appreciate, so I can give you not only my undivided attention, but in the right way. And I don't, I know it may seem unnatural, but when you say, I have an awareness thing I want to do with you, or I have something that I'd like you to give me advice on.
You know, the biggest thing that I was thinking as you were talking is that people are probably going to struggle with not being defensive, just hearing your partner and saying, I can see how you would feel that way. You deserve better. I'll work on it. That takes a very elevated level of human thought and emotion.
Incredibly. But the point is, and it's very daunting. I belong to an entrepreneurial association of men, and it's not anti-women. It's just that the main meeting is on Saturday mornings, and a lot of women, don't have time for that because they've worked all week. And when I've shared this with them, these entrepreneurial men, they just go, wow, meaning, what I'm suggesting is not wrong, but that would take a lot of courage. Why? Because I frequently cause my partner to feel that they're not worth my undivided attention. I said, well, this is a way to correct it. And so you're right. It's incredibly daunting. But if you have a relationship that's going sideways and you're saying to yourself, where did our love go? It might be something worth trying.
I like it a lot. And I think, I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is, as far as this kind of new direction of the podcast goes, it's not about you. If you want to have a successful life and you want to have great relationships, pull yourself out of it and start identifying how others around you feel and what's coming up for them. And you can acknowledge and validate without agreeing. You don't have to agree with what someone says in order to acknowledge and validate. And you don't even have to agree with what someone says to improve the way you show up in their life either.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You shared that on the podcast, which I just loved. And you're right. And I think we were trying to make the word validate sort of less shrinky, less therapist kind of thing. but I think the essence is being able to hear the other person out, but that doesn't mean you have to agree or accept with what they're saying. But I think the key is, as you say, that's building a muscle. I mean, just like Hoover is building a muscle, just like this conversation about have I ever made you feel you weren't worth listening to is building a muscle. I think what you're suggesting is a great way of building a muscle of, not getting defensive, not taking an issue with what the other person's saying, and realizing that for them, it's real for them. That's what they believe. And you're respecting that that's what they believe, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to accept it or agree with it.
And that it puts you in such an empowering spot. And I think that, the larger theme of the conversation of just listen, you know, you don't have to fix, solve, you don't have to defend, you can just listen. And I think that 9 out of 10 people, that's all they want 9 out of 10 times, is just to be heard.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, it's something that I'll share with you that I've just realized, I think I was on another podcast, I was thinking, I was putting myself in the shoes of a person who's really anxious. And a person who's really anxious can't listen because they're anxious. They're already overwhelmed. And when you try to give them advice or solutions, they can't take it in. I mean, they might smile and nod, but they can't take it in. I know that my mind is often overwhelmed because of so many things I'm trying to keep on top of. And when my wife says, oh, don't forget to bring home milk, you know, I want to be respectful of that. But in order to listen to her telling me, don't forget to bring home milk, I'll forget something. I'll forget to take my wallet to work. I'll forget to take something else because there's no room in my head, and anxious people feel that way. And then depressed people, what they feel is not so much that there's no space, but there's a negativity that nothing will work. And so I think listening, and by listening is enabling them to get something off their chest, frees up space in their mind. But when you let them get stuff up on their chest, I think there needs to be a pregnant, and I use that word pregnant, pause where you take it in and they feel heard, understood, validated, to use your word, and they feel that you accepted what they said. It doesn't mean that you agree with it. I mean, you accepted that what they said about their state of mind is true for them. And I think when people feel that, they then you create space in their mind. I remember there was someone, you know, I had a practice that was focused on suicide prevention. And I remember years ago, there was someone I was seeing, and I said, what seems to help in what we're doing? You know, it seems like it's helping. And he looked at me, and this was such a poignant insight. He said, I'm a burden to everyone in my life. I scare my parents. My brother and sister think I'm manipulative, which I am. I'm a burden to myself because, you know, I can't stand that I, you know, am behind everyone I know, and I feel like a loser. And so what I often feel like, and this is why I'm suicidal, is if I'm such a burden to everyone, including myself, why don't I just end it?
Wow.
And then he said, but what helped with you is when I first met you, you smiled in a way that you were glad to see me, and it had nothing to do with whether I followed treatment or what the diagnosis was. Wow. And, you know, and I thought you were crazy, Doc. In fact, I still think you're crazy because I can't believe when you see me, you smile, you look forward to seeing me, as opposed to let's make sure that you follow the program. And one thing that it convinced me is that I'm not a burden to you.
Wow.
So you're like an oasis in my life. Again, I do believe I'm not a burden to you, but I do still think you're crazy, Doc.
But that's something that he didn't feel anywhere else.
That's right, because what he felt everywhere was I'm a burden, I'm a burden, I'm a burden. And so what happened is, it's not so much that listening to someone without an agenda is, and listening with what we call a beginner's mind, which is an open mind, and something that I listen for because, you know, a fair number of my practice were depressed and suicidal, is I always listen for hurt, fear, anger, and how much time before they do something destructive.
Wow.
Because it was always there. And sometimes I would even say, you know, where's the hurt?
Oh, wow.
How bad does it hurt? Does it ever get to the point where you can't take it anymore? And where's the fear? And part of their fear was, that nothing will help. And where's the anger? Well, a lot of the anger was they'd make people nervous. And so the people would say, well, tell me what's going on. And then they'd say what's going on. And then people would jump in, like their parents, and give them advice that they didn't want and they weren't going to follow. And then they'd get into an argument because, and the parents were only giving advice, not because they wanted to give advice. It's because this person scared the parents. So out of fear, the parents came up with a solution. But the point is, they didn't want a solution, even though they needed one. They wanted relief from the pain, from the hurt and the fear.
I think that something that I'm taking away from what you're saying is really important is that have some empathy by realizing that people are harder on themselves than you could ever be on them. And I know that I try to do this with my son. If my son did something disappointing, I try to first tell myself he's being harder on himself than I could ever be. And try to find a space of empathy before I talk at all, before I say a single word about how I feel about what's happened. And that seems to be pretty effective.
Yeah, I have a wise friend of mine, a rabbi. He was talking about what he said to his children when they were growing up, and they would do something or fail to do something. He said, I knew they already felt bad about it, after they'd done it or after they failed to do it. They know that they messed up. So they were already beating up on themselves. And one of the things he would say to them, and again, he did it in a loving tone, so he wasn't, giving them conditional love. What he'd say to them is, what you did or didn't do is not who I believe you are, and I don't think it's who you believe you are.
Wow.
But isn't that lovely?
That's pretty powerful. Yeah. Yes, it is.
I'll share something else. I had someone else on the podcast named Daryl Stickle, and he was amazing. Well, you were amazing. And he has something called Trust Unlimited. And I'll send you a, and if you go there, he was the wisest and most articulate person speaking about trust. And he has a wonderful article at Trust Unlimited on parenting. But he said to me, here was his, for instance. He said, one of my children was late all the time. Late, late at things that he needed to do in school, late at home. And there was one time that he was late with me, and he knew that he'd done something wrong. So I didn't need to beat up on him. And this is what he said, Michaela. Instead, he was the kid was expecting a lecture, and instead he smiled at his son and said, "You were worth the wait."
Right. Wow.
Isn't that amazing? I mean,
It is. It is. It is so amazing. And it's difficult to do as a parent when you're in a hurry.
Oh yeah,
Wow.
it's something I'll share with you, and we can do it offline, and I'm giving away something that is, I think a year from now, there's something I'm involved with that is going to fundamentally change the conversations between parents and teenagers and make them better, and it's going to save lives. A friend of mine named Jason Reed, his 14-year-old son died by suicide, and his son left a note called, and it said, "Tell my story." And Jason did a
My
documentary
gosh.
called "Tell My Story."
Oh my gosh, I can't even. Whew.
He put over $200,000 into it, and he went up and down the West Coast, and it's on Amazon Prime, Tell My Story.
Oh my gosh.
And he spoke to parents, he spoke to treatment centers, he spoke to experts. I'm in the last 10 minutes of it. He interviewed me, and he realized that what was most compelling was when there would be teenagers in the documentary who talked about what it was like at their worst. So he just finished something that's not going to go on Netflix. It's not going to go on YouTube. He interviewed eight teenagers who are doing well, but he drilled down about their sadness and talked to me about when it was at its worst. And Michaela, it is mesmerizing. And so the plan is to only have it available in high schools for parents, because I've already shown it to some people, and what's going to happen is parents are going to watch this, they're going to go home, they're going to see their teenager, and they're going to start crying, and the teenager is going to say, "What's the matter, Mom? What's the matter, Dad?" And this is happening each time. And the parents say, "I just realized how much I love you." And what they're really saying is, "I just thought about what it would be like if I lost you."
Oh my gosh.
Or "I just thought about when you go into your room and you say you're fine. I just thought about what's really going on in your head. And I love you and I'm sorry it hurts." And it will change things. It will change the landscape, because that's all it is. And so what it'll be is the video goes to high schools, and then for 45 minutes, they'll have mental health resources come in. We'll have to do a little training, because we don't want, because it is so mesmerizing, these eight teenagers. We don't want mental health professionals to come in and sell their services. So we're going to want any of those mental health practitioners who come in, that they see the documentary first, because parents are going to be shook up in a good way. But I'm so excited, because I, a big part of my practice was suicidal patients, and I've been looking for a breakthrough, a way, and it's not going to come from mental health professionals. It's got to come from parents and their teenagers, and parents just don't know how to do it. But if you go there and you're a driven entrepreneur person and you watch these teenagers, it's happening each time. You'll go home, because you'll just see their sullenness and their, being stubborn, and you'll see that what's underneath it all are some of these feelings that these teenagers share.
Wow. That's incredible. Mark, it has been such a joy to have you on with all of your unwavering insights and just such a fantastic conversation. I'm so grateful that you were willing to come on and share some of this amazing pearls that you've got. So thank you so much for your time on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for, you did a good job. I was just rating you on Whova, and you did a good job. I felt heard out. I felt understood. I felt valued, and I felt you added value. So give yourself a 10, 10, 10, 10.
I love that. I'm going to start using the Whova, which kind of reminds me of a vacuum, like sucking up
Yeah.
data.
Well, we tried to use Dyson, but we just, it just didn't work.
That's not as good. I like Whova. You have a great rest of the week.
You too. You too.
Take
You take
care.
care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. For more inspiration, check out the links.